Hello, folks. This is Dr. Sandy Gluckman. And as you know, my practice is called Parenting That Heals. And today I am so excited. I have a very special lady with me, a very special person. And her name is Carla Atherton. Carla is the director of the Healthy Family Formula and the HFF Practitioner Training Academy. She is host and producer of the Children's Health Summit and author of Family Health Revolution, fabulous book. Carla is a family health consultant and coach and children's health advocate. Spurred on by the love for her three glorious children, Carla's mission is to support families to achieve their best health through information, guidance, and empowerment. Welcome, Carla.
Thank you so much for having me here, Sandy. I'm just so excited.
It's just my greatest pleasure. Well, how are you in your part of the world?
Great. Actually, we're doing just fine, actually. We were talking about before you hit record, we live in the country, so we have we're quite blessed to be where we are, and just beautiful every single day. And I work from home anyway, so I'm always in touch with people, and I feel very supported, and I'm able to support others in my work still. So things are still going very well in my neck of the woods here.
So did you want to tell people where that neck of the woods is? Where do you live?
We live, we're in Canada. So we're in the prairies in Canada, in Saskatchewan. Uh-huh. And so we're sort of like the southern third of the province. So we're about 5 hours from the border of Montana.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little about your amazing new book, which was recently launched, called Family Health Revolution. And the question I have for you, Carla, because it is such a comprehensive book with such unbelievable information. And I wanted to know what prompted you to write this book.
I think I had to. I mean, and I don't mean for other people or external reasons. I mean because I've always been someone who I love to gather information. Like you and I have that in common, right? We want to do it all. We want to collect it all. We want to know it all. We want to experience it all. It can be a lot. And it was a lot for me in our healing journey for my family too. That was a huge learning curve because I was learning a lot of really different things that I was open to, but had no idea about. So as I learned, I would put things in files and sort things and create programs and, you know, add to my offerings for clients and that kind of thing. So as I learned, I would do that. But it was so much that I felt like, so someone would come to me and say, hey, Carla, my child has acne, or my child gets tummy aches, or I'm not so feeling so good as a mom. I'm really tired. You know, what should I do? And they're looking for like this magic bullet, which I can understand why. Right? Because when we suffer, we don't want to do that. We want something to fix it.
Yes, children who are suffering.
Yeah.
And we want that magic bullet so quickly, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so with that, though, I would look at them and I would think, oh my gosh, I can't even tell you all the things that could be the issue and what to do about it, because everybody's different. There's so many different options and opportunities available for healing. And a lot of the background of what's going on in the human body, people don't know just yet. Like, you know, we're like, okay, I'm kind of getting this thing about gut health and how that relates to mental health, or how conversely, like, you know, stress will affect the motility and mobility and function of our guts. So, you know, so we're getting that, but a lot of people need a bit more information. So I would be like, how do I explain all this in 5 seconds or less? Like, that's not possible. So it was partially that, wanting to provide that information for people with a new outlook, a new paradigm of health that wasn't quick fixes, but whole health from the roots up, from the, you know, the inside out. and all aspects of the self, including like my mind, body, spirit, our environment, as well as our family unit. So then it's also partially my story. So whenever I try to communicate with people about these things, it's really useful for people to know what I've experienced and come through, and then we can kind of connect on that, so that it's like, oh, okay, this is practical stuff. This isn't a theory. This isn't just something that could work or whatever. It does work, and so that was another aspect of the book, and you know, it was just sort of like coming out of me, you know. Yeah. So it was just like I just had to put it all together. So that's the purpose, is to be able to provide that information and the support, because it's supportive to be able to communicate in a very honest and real way with people, and we're not alone. Yeah. There's somebody there, and with the, you know, with proper information, right? Like really cutting edge information and actionable steps, because that's what I came to as I was learning. Well, yeah, okay, now I know the problems, but what do I do about it? Because that's very disempowering. To think that you're, you know, being empowered by information, but then you have no solutions.
And
so that's what I wanted to do in the book.
I think it makes people anxious, knowing what the problem is.
Oh, yeah.
But not having the how to fix it and how to address it. And what I love about your book and what you've just said is that it is your story. And so it's not, as you said, something that is academic and theoretical and just stuff you've learned in research, but it is so real for you. You've applied it in your life, and that for me is really important when we're looking at a practitioner, because I always tell my clients, I will never teach you anything that I have not experienced for myself first.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they know that I've been there, I might still be there. And I am there, and I know what it feels, and I'm coming through it, and there's a way through. So I love that your story is built into that. So Carla, this term health, such a vital one, and yet I think we kind of use it quite loosely very often, and can be interpreted in a broad way, in different ways. What is your sort of your bottom line definition of this word health or healthy?
Okay. So I think that health involves balance, right? It's never hyper into one way or the other. It's always a matter of balance. And it's also, I think really generally speaking, it's where people feel relatively well most of the time. And they don't have to think about it. You know, it's a natural state of being. I think it should be our default to feel healthy, to be healthy. Mind, body, spirit, environment, you know, our communities, our families, all of those things are aspects of health that we need to, you know, that we can pay attention to and that affect our well-being. And so well-being sort of is like a whitewash. It's sort of like whitewashed now, that whole term well-being. But really that's what it comes down to, is that we should feel well all the time, most of the time. And then we have those instances where we fall, you know, we have infection or we get injured or we have a trauma, you know, things happen in life all the time. You know, we're not immortal beings. Sure. And we are susceptible to our environment and the things we're exposed to, even if we try to, you know, quote unquote, control it or, you know, create environments that are healthy, we do encounter other unhealthy environments due to other people's, you know, their decisions or things that are not in any of our control.
Yes.
So that will happen. And that is, you're still a healthy person, even if you, you know, get an infection or even if you have a trauma or an accident or something like that, you can still be a healthy person. It doesn't. So it's not where it's all or nothing. It's all about balance. It's all about, you know, everything kind of working tickety-boo most of the time in a natural way without any sort of force or hyper-focus on illness.
Yes, and that triggers a thought for me. I think that people interpret health as being not having illness, not being sick, not having a disease. And from what you're saying, and what I believe too, is that health is a state of being. It's not, you're not only healthy when you're not sick.
But right.
You're healthy.
And I think there's a continuum. Sorry, I interrupted you. No. I think there's a continuum, like a spectrum as well that you move within. Mm-hmm. You know, like I know people who have chronic illness, quote unquote, that are super, like I would consider them to be very healthy, well-balanced, stable people, but they're working through something in their life that is creating some kind of symptom. So a lot of these diseases or disorders or whatever, they're actually really just a set of symptoms that the body's working itself through, because our lives are, you know, a journey, you know, and it's not just where you land somewhere that's called health and you're just like, woohoo, I'm super woman. And, you know, like it's like sort of ebbs and flows and it goes up and it goes down, but they're still returning to that balance most of the time, right? It's okay to move around there a little bit.
Right.
And we might have a point of our lives where we don't feel as healthy as other times, but it doesn't mean that we're sick or damaged or disordered, you know. It just means that something's coming up, an emotional thing, a physical thing, you know. It's saying, hey, look at me, you know. You're living in maybe you should stop smoking, maybe you gotta look at this trapped emotion, you know, maybe you gotta reduce your stress. And so then we return it all to the state of homeostasis and of balance.
Lovely. So I was thinking about a client that I saw yesterday, and she's an amazing person and mother and wife. And she's done such incredible work on herself, and she is really in a state of health most of the time. But she said to me yesterday, you know, Dr. Sandy, some physical symptoms have started to crop up for me. And she's very aware of her body and what's going on, and you know, her emotions. And so she said, so obviously there's a piece of work I have to do in order to come back into that balance that you're talking about, Carla. So she said, well, I'm just kind of sad that this piece of work has popped up, that I have these symptoms, but at the same time, what a huge opportunity for me to fix something that has not been dealt with, so that I can get even more into balance and stay there even longer. So I thought that was a very enlightened mom talking. And it's interesting, you know, Carla, that her child, her son, is picking up her symptoms. So he's beginning to know symptoms too. And she again is so aware. She says he's just reflecting what I'm feeling. So we do have a kind of additional responsibility to know that when we're not well, there's probably some underlying root cause. No, not probably. There's definitely some underlying root cause as an unfinished business. And we need to deal with it, because otherwise our children pick up on that. So
yes,
I'd love, so you know, me being in the whole parenting field, but in a very different kind of way, I enjoyed your chapter called Parenting for Health, and I'd love to drill down on this chapter with you and ask you, would you agree with me? Well, it's probably a redundant question, but let me ask it anyway. Would you agree with me if I suggest that stress is the greatest barrier to parenting in a way that creates healthy family?
Without a doubt. Like that's like, for me, the more that I learn about stress and trauma, and I mean, you're asking me like for parents, and we're probably talking about that sort of stress response that we can have if we don't actually, you know, pay attention to our stressors. But you know, so there's also the body aspect of stress, what stressors cause our bodies to be under stress, but also like that mental emotional piece, that like the mind body, you know, works all together, right? So I completely agree that if we are operating in that survival mode, the ooga booga brain, you know, where we're reacting and not responding, I just love that. I don't even know where I heard that, but years and years ago I heard that, and I just can't get that out of my mind. If we're reacting, maybe it was you, maybe it was you, Sandy, you know, reacting and not responding, I think that is, we're not going to be good parents. It's like we actually can't, because all of our energies are put into survival and not being logical, not being rational, not being body aware or aware about what, how we're affecting other people, and not even necessarily caring about that in the moment, because we're too busy in a state of fear and trying to survive. And that might take some many different manifestations. You know, we could be thinking that we're demanding respect, or we could be thinking that we're demanding, you know, our children to behave better, or we could be thinking that we want them to be healthier, so we're forcing certain things on them, or you know, or just being like more subtle. You know, it doesn't have to be outbursts or yelling. You know, it could be where we are manipulative, you know, coercive. You know, those things are even harder to put our fingers on, because we're not going to have any good responses from our children that way. They'll learn to mistrust, they'll hide things, they'll actually maybe even act worse, they'll respond with that same reactivity like you always talk about, Sandy, like where they mirror your reactive response. I love it. I think what you're saying is so bang on. They have no choice, right?
They have no choice.
Mirror it, because they're protecting themselves. So you throw them right into that state of stress. And then how is anybody going to heal? Because we know in not only functional medicine, but also lifestyle interventions and people in the trauma space and in this new psychology that we've been, you know, really it has been exploding with beautiful insight, is that we have to be in a state of safety, like the polyvagal theory, right? We have to be in a state of safety to heal at all. And that's not just mental, emotional. That's physical healing as well. So for sure, Sandy, for sure. Stress is number one. Yeah.
Yes. And it was probably me talking about the reactive parent.
Uh-huh.
I actually call it the inflammatory parenting. Because
yes,
what's really happening is, unintentionally, of course, but the parent is inflaming the child's brain with the stressful reactive response, and then getting the exact response back, which they created by increasing the stress and causing the inflammation in the brain. And also, you know, I did a YouTube yesterday, which is so appropriate to what we're speaking about, because it was called something about healthy parenting. You know, what is a healthy parenting? And I spoke about the fact that there are two kinds of parenting. There's those parents who parent from the present by being absolutely in the present, parenting from the present self to what's going on with the child. But then there's the parents who parent from the past.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent who is reactive is actually a parent who is parenting from the past, because something that the child is doing is triggering an old memory or an old emotion that's stuck in there that never got dealt with. And so it's almost like the parent becomes a seven-year-old and reacts to the child and then creates the very kind of behavior that we take them to the doctor for, because they need some kind of a diagnosis.
Yes.
So, Carla, what would you say are the four cornerstones in your mind of parenting for health?
Four? Okay. I should have prepped this. so four cornerstones.
You know what? Doesn't matter. Just what are the cornerstones? What are the important aspects of parenting for health?
Well, I think that awareness is definitely one of those things.
Yes. You know?
Awareness, yes. And so I think that if we're aware, as ourselves, and we teach our children to be aware of their bodies, of their responses, of where things are coming from, what's the real root of this? Like when you said that parents can parent from the past, yeah, I think many of us do that. I think most of the time that's almost like a default. And then it's sort of like a conscious choice to not do that, right? Like, oh, I'm going into my reptilian brain. I'm going into the past. I'm going to my memories. I'm going into what doesn't need to exist anymore. What I was taught, or all these falsehoods or whatever, my own ego, I don't know, whatever that is. And so, but being aware of that, you go, okay, that's what I'm doing and or thinking or like wanting to do, and being able to not do that. And so we have choice in every moment with our children, every single moment, even when we feel like we are the least in control. It's like, nope, because we have rational thought, and we can actually change that around, especially if we work on those things. But that's another story. You know, like meditation and mindfulness and gratitude and all those things. But yeah, so I think the first thing would be being aware of our bodily responses, knowing, okay, this is a neurochemical, an adrenal hormone, cortisol is like, you know, shooting up, my adrenaline shooting up, whatever. If we know that stuff's going on biochemically and in our own patterns of behavior, mm-hmm. we can actually intervene and also teach our children, like even as simple as, you know, stop and, go, I'm going to over-respond right now. I'm going to have a big fit and I'm going to go to my room, or I'm going to go for a walk.
Yes.
Or I can't do, and my children actually instinctually did that. Like it was like, and as parents, we need to allow them to do that, because if we don't, then like, we're just confrontational. It's all about us. No, we need to be able to get everybody to a space where they feel safe, and then we can actually deal with whatever problem there was. So self-awareness, I think that's number one. There's another, I think the next thing would be, well, I kind of moved into that, would be self-regulation.
Ah, yes.
Right? So regulating, right?
Yes.
So being able to, right? Yeah, yes. Go ahead.
I'm laughing because, I would say that 90% of parents who come visit with me, when I ask, what are some of your goals for our sessions, mm-hmm. and please teach me how to teach my child to self-regulate. But what's happening is parents don't often know how to self-regulate, but they want to come and fix the child because the child doesn't self-regulate. So, yeah.
I have two things to say to that. So about I totally think that that's definitely the first thing to do, is for parents to learn how to do that for themselves. Quite often it's where the child has not learned that, because the parents don't do it.
Yeah.
And so then we expect these kids to self-regulate, to be good and obedient and listen and, you know, do what we want them to do, and be manipulated maybe sometimes. This sounds so negative. I'm not trying to be negative for parents, but I had to really look at this for myself and be very honest with myself. Like, am I doing that? Am I actually expecting this from my child when I've actually taught this behavior, or I haven't addressed it in a healthy way? So just, parents, I get it. Been there. I do it all the time. I still do it. I did it the other day. I actually was like, I'm having a meltdown right now in front of everybody, and I'm not, like, I wasn't yelling at anybody, but I was being inflammatory in front of them because I was just like tired and I had it. And I'm like, and it wasn't about them, but it was, and I thought, oh, I'm totally infringing on their space. I'm going against everything I want to do and everything I learned, and allowing this booga booga to take charge. No. So I, of course, talked about it, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go on a timeout. And so these are the things that we're teaching our kids, and not only just in behavior, but in patterns, but also in their nervous system. Like, it's not like where it's always conscious, right? So they're like, they'll react, but not even like on purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's something that's just sort of in their nervous system, and it becomes an automatic response.
It does.
So, it does. So self-regulation. Okay. So, and you said, pushing it on the child to, you know, be the one that's respond, like they're the ones that need to be fixed. I had to really work on that. And not in a way that, like, I never thought that any child that's come to me or my child was broken, but I would use that terminology in my mind. We're going to fix this. We're going to, you know, overcome it and whatever, all this stuff. But it wasn't like they needed to be fixed. They just needed to learn how to balance things out. And same thing with me as a parent, or parents that I work with, parents that are working with their kids who are listening. We can learn how to balance things out, not fix it, but make sure we're on that continuum of good health, of the, you know, balancing, of returning back to that really nice baseline where we feel relatively well most of the time. So I think that's really important, is not to think, because our kids, when they feel like they're the ones going to therapy and they're the ones that are damaged and they're the ones that need to be fixed, well, just think about what that does to their self-esteem, the labeling, and really how limiting it is for their entire lives sometimes, where they have those messages that lower their self-esteem, that, you know, I'm not saying coddle and all that. I'm just saying that they're not broken and they don't need to be like seen as such. Even if we're trying to be helpful, even if our kids have something like my kiddo had, you know, a really serious autoimmune condition, where, you know, we're thinking, oh, we need to fix this, we need to make it better. There's a real fine line between fixing, right, and healing, but the difference is profound.
Oh,
the difference is profound.
Huge. I love what you say. That's so important. And so my final thought I want to share with you and see what we can chat about is that being a parent is probably the most important role a person can ever have in life. And yet it seems to me that it is the one role for which people are the least prepared or have had the least amount of training in. What are your thoughts about this?
Okay, I've got a couple thoughts. Okay, so I was a relatively young mom, you know, like in comparison to a lot of people these days. Like I was 23 when I had my first child.
Mm.
And his father and I, we'd been together for 4 years. So it wasn't like it was, or five, actually. So by the time he was born, 5 years. And so, you know, it wasn't like a big, huge surprise or anything. And I'd always worked with kids. So I'd run programs for kids. I had, you know, my first job was babysitting, right? And I was always that responsible oldest cousin of 9 other cousins younger than me, right? So, and I nannied my way through, you know, that's what helped me to pay the bills when I was doing my undergrad degree. Okay. So he was born when I graduated from my first degree in university. And so I've always been around children. So I feel like we train, quote unquote, through life. So we learn from our parents. We, you know, learn through our own exchange with younger people, by caregiving, you know, so there's a lot, and we do think about these things before we have children. Maybe it's like right before, you know, once we become pregnant or something like that, that might be the case. But we do that sort of thing. It's all through life because parenting isn't really, I mean, we use it as a verb now, right?
Yeah.
But really it's just a way of having relationship with the children we care for, right? So we're always in training as human beings, how to be in healthy relationships and how we interact and communicate with each other. So at the same time as understanding that and seeing it as such a natural progression, and we learn and we make mistakes and we're first time parents, and then the second time parents, it's different. And then the third time parent, it's different. You know, so all those kids will tell you, like, I was the first one, so I had all the rules. And then that youngest one doesn't have any, like, you know, there's so many different dynamics that happen and things as we change and as we parent ourselves, which Naomi Aldort expertly says. She says, we don't parent our children, we actually parent ourselves.
Yes.
Which is right. So I think it's a natural thing. But at the same time, I really do value people like yourself, or like, you know, like I said, Naomi Aldort or Gordon Neufeld, who actually point out some of these things we can explore and understand about our own personal growth as parents.
Mm.
So I don't know that, I mean, and sometimes we think like, wow, there should be a training program because, man, some of us really feel like we're making a mess of things, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I think that we have to be as parents, both, you know, really doing our best, and trying to curtail the really big things, you know, like the ones that can cause a lot of harm, like yelling, abuse, you know, all that stuff. That stuff's like no go.
Yeah.
But all the other things, I think, related to parenting, we're all going to make mistakes. We need to be aware of what these experts say, but really truthfully, we are the experts in our own personal growth. And we learn from all these people that are very, you know, they have thought about these things, but I also don't think we need to pick it apart as much as we can, because it can be a very stressful process to think, oh my gosh, I've damaged them. Oh my God, if I do this, if I do that, I think parenting should be a natural process. And if we make mistakes, we heal and we rectify and we communicate and we listen to our kids and ourselves. So then we have this really natural progression of growth for both you and your kids. And see, this is what I focus on, Sandy. Laughter, joy, you know, really good communication and acceptance. And we push each other in families, right? We push each other to be better because we care about each other. We don't want to see other people in our families eating poorly, not sleeping, you know, drinking, smoking. You know, I remember hiding my mom's cigarettes in the couch and, like, you know, kind of sit because I was too scared to actually break them up. So I put them in the couch and just kind of sit on it and hope they broke, you know, like, you know, so we want each other to be healthy. We want them to be better, but we also have to respect each other's, you know, decisions too. So that's my focus, is on joy and connection and, you know, eating together and doing things together and listening. It's so important, rather, even more than talking. And I'm one of those talking moms, as you could probably tell. And I had to learn how to just, like, zip, zip, be quiet and listen, because they're going through their own process of discovery as well. So I think that focusing on those things it's better training than, like, any other training you could get, because you're actually experiencing life with them in a, like you say, non-inflammatory way, where we can respond to life rather than react to it, and we can better navigate the bumps along the way.
Yes. And yes, I believe, like you, that every parent does the very best they know how. For me, the important part of that phrase is the best they know how. And so very often what is the very best that the parent is doing, and we're all parents are motivated to be the best parent they can be. But it's not always exactly what the child, that particular child, needs. So we do have to learn to adapt our parenting style to what's going on inside of the child in terms of the child's spirit and body and brain, and make those kind of adaptations. It goes all the way back to what you and I said earlier, and that is that awareness is just number one skill and need when it comes to being a parent.
I totally agree. And I think that you said, what were you talking about? That best that they know how to be, and awareness. Yes. Okay. I just totally lost my train of thought, but there was something I wanted to add to that, about how parents, I can't remember now. Okay. Never mind. Just ignore that.
It may come back in a minute. So the thing is though, Carla, I do want to say that, I am like you, so blessed to be able to work with the most incredibly wonderful moms and dads. Mm-hmm. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
I don't know why I am no longer on the screen. Give me a minute.
Oh, I see you.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to edit that or not. We'll see.
Okay.
So I was saying that we work with wonderful moms and dads, you and I, and people who really are wanting to know and wanting to learn and wanting to change and be better and different. And for me, I think that the openness of a mom or a dad to saying, I'm loving the child in the best way I know how, but it doesn't seem to be right for the child. The openness to that kind of statement, saying, show me how to be a healthy parent for this particular child, because different children have different needs.
Yes.
So it's the openness and the lack of defensiveness that I think is so vitally important.
I love that you said lack of defensiveness, because our egos can take over and our own, and not even just ego, like as in we're, you know, think we're so great, but sometimes we don't think we're great and we have a lot of guilt. And when we have guilt, it's really tough to admit to your flaws, because you're trying so desperately to hold on to that, and it really hurt. Like, it's like stabbing, you know, like, ooh, I wasn't good in that capacity, and I'm just going to, like, you know, pretend like I am. Like, I'm just like, nope, I'm not going to even go there and recognize where I might have gone wrong, or might have not done the best thing in that situation or for that child. So that's tough. You know, you actually have to be working on yourself a little bit and your own, you know, and be able to be brave enough and, you know, vulnerable enough to admit those things and move on and not live in guilt. That's huge. Like, we can't live in guilt in the past, what we did before. I actually am still working through a couple of things, and I don't know why I can't get them out of my mind. Things, mistakes I made as a parent. And I'm like, that was a bad mom moment. And I just, like, guilt is just like, you know, so you just work through it, because it's not going to help you. It will inform you for next time, but you can't live in that feeling because you just can't. You can't do anything about it now except for be better the next time,
of course,
or more informed the next time.
And there's such bad chemistry that goes in our body, in our brain, when we are feeling guilt. So, and we need to say, you know, I did the best I knew how then, but I'm looking back now and I'm thinking, oh no, that really was not what my baby needed. And be able to say that, then let go of the guilt and say, okay, what can I need to do differently right now? So yes, that takes a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. And as you say, vulnerability. Vulnerability is an incredible characteristic, and being vulnerable requires huge courage. And talking about courage, Carla, you're someone who's got lots and lots of that.
I don't know about that. Maybe. I just want to say something really quick, Sandy, before you move on to the next thing. But I remembered what I was wanting to say, because you talked about parenting styles. And I think that there's two things that go into parenting style. Well, one thing I do want to say is that we have, you know, I can totally agree about each child is different. I had to be very different for each of my children. Some liked to talk more. Some didn't want to talk much at all. Some like, you know, things like body therapies and, you know, like they really loved the nutrition piece and taking care of themselves. Other ones really wanted to work on the like massage and being quiet and mind body things and stuff like that. So very different. But those were all parts of me. Yes. You know, it wasn't like it was so foreign to me that I didn't understand how to support them in that, because it was just pulling out different parts of myself.
Right.
And so that's another thing of self-discovery, is like, how can we be in different capacities, not as a like we're not just different people, but they're different parts of ourselves. And the thing about parenting style too, I think that it comes from two different places. What we've learned, right? And that can be adjusted. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough to, you know, those old patterns, the way that we've been parented as well. So we partially learn parenting styles, but I think that the best parenting style that works for each of our children, because they came to this earth and chose us, you know, there's a reason why we are connected. These little spirits came to us, and they're very, you know, so we have that ability to be very connected to all of our children. But so really our parenting style comes from the way we live as families and who we are as people. And I'll tell you, like, for us, humor, like goofiness, you know, like, you know, we love to be in nature. That's how I raised them, is that we were always outside for hours and hours, and being able to be self-expressive and creative. So that was more of my style, rather than, you know, I was just wasn't as comfortable with, you know, more structure or, you know, things like that. But some families really thrive in that kind of style. So they get used to our styles too when they're born, you know? So yeah, anyway, that's just another thing. I just wanted to say that because it came to me. I remembered what I wanted to say.
Oh, good. What a relief. Yes. And it does take us full circle back to saying that a healthy parent is one that parents in the present. So in other words, you're able to look at the child and watch what the child's reacting positively and negatively to, and then say, this works for this child, but not for that child. That child loves body massage. This child hates being touched. So we need to be in the present to be able to do that and not work from an old generational program that we've brought into parenting with us.
Should. No, stop.
Okay, Carla, thank you so, so much. We could go on forever, but we'll get another chance to do that. And thank you so much for being with us today. This is Carla.
Thanks so much for having me.
Talking to. And this is Dr. Sandy saying bye for now.